That it?
Yeah, Jack. Looks like that's it.
Know what went wrong, John?
I have a feeling that... I'm not sure. Don't want to make myself look like a fool a second time.
Back to the drawing board.
Never mind. Leave it a while now. Plenty for us all to do in the village to get ready to receive our guests. That had been at the center of Ryan's plan. They'll expect to more or less take us by surprise. Probably won't know we're here. Probably won't worry even if they know we're here. Just look to come in like always.
But they might suspect we could stage an early deterrent strike.
One thing they won't expect is for us to try and trap them here. Actually, here in the village, the honeypot they think they're walking into raid. We'll turn this place into a fortress. Not to keep them out, to let them in and keep them in. That's the heart of the plan. Time's the problem. I don't know how long before they make the move against us here.
Us? You saying the village is us?
Sure, for the time being, the village is us. Unless anyone here wants to break and run. All right.
Main thing is to work fast. My guess is they'll take a couple of days to regroup, spend some time in their camp, clean their blasters, sharpen their knives, rest. And they'll have to make contact with their own masters at the silver mine, confirm orders. Yeah, 3 days.
Itzcoatl joined them to discuss their plans. JB was in charge of the conversion of the village into a sophisticated man-trap. It was vital that everything should look like it always did. Nothing should arouse the suspicion of the slavers.
Itzcoatl said that in the big raids, the Anglos generally come in on horseback. We can hit animals more easily with pits and nets, build some internal walls. They don't have to be high to block off freaked horses. Give shelter for us to do some shooting.
The actual armory of the natives was disappointing, consisting only of a couple of old Portuguese Savage pistols and 3 Mauser Vergara rifles, with virtually no ammunition. JB checked them and dismissed them out of hand.
Been neglected for 100 years. Good chance that they'll blow out and take a hand and half the face of anyone using them. Itzcoatl, it would be more efficient if everyone used their bows and their blowpipes. Use the time to make plenty more arrows.
And more poison.
Poison?
You mean like curare?
I do not know that name. The poison comes from a mix of the blood of a secret plant.
Sap.
I do not know that word, too. What bleeds when you cut into this plant? It is fed to a dog. Dog goes stiff. Dies with eyes open and bloody and jaw wide. We keep body until it is gone rotten. Very quick. Quicker than ordinary dying. Boil body and keep boiled until only little sticky water is left. Then use that wiped on points of arrows and darts from blowpipes. Is very good.
Ryan agreed with his old friend's judgment, and the men of the village busied themselves with making dozens more arrows, while the priests and older women brewed up vile-smelling cauldrons of the poisonous gruel. And there was endless practicing, as JB sought to improve the already impressive marksmanship of the warriors. The younger men and most of the women were set to digging traps and trenches, stringing up nets across the 2 main trails into the village, rigging them under Jack's supervision so that they could be pulled by hidden ropes at a moment's notice. And in his spare time, JB worked with Doc on getting the recipe right for the thermite. The fourth demonstration came toward the evening of the second day since Ryan and Christie's safe return to the village. Like the other attempts, it was held a short distance from the perimeter fence, on a strip of level ground between lake and forest. Another of the small metal tubes was buried for 3/4 of its length in the dirt, with the curling end of the fuse protruding 1 inch from its top. The second and third tries had both been total failures, with nothing more than the wisp of white smoke from the fuse, followed by stillness. This time, only Ryan and Dean bothered to come and watch, the rest of the friends busy with the work of readying the settlement for the slavers' attack. A couple of the older women had also wandered by, stopping to watch the 4 mad Anglos at their incomprehensible games. JB scratched the self-light, and the wavering flame was applied to the fuse. He waited until the white smoke told him that the potential bomb was lit, then scampered away to join the others. There was a flash of brilliant silvery white light from the metal tube that almost blinded the watchers. The 2 native women clung to each other for support. But after the flash, there was nothing.
That it? Might scare them slavers for a whole bit of a minute.
JB shook his head, walking toward the smoldering patch of scorched grass.
That was just the igniter mixture going. but it didn't set off the thermite.
Let us look on the bright side, my friend John. As the great Welsh philosopher Dafydd Ap Tomas remarked, one must overcome the large defeats and cherish the small victories. We are getting there, John. Oh, yes, we are getting there.
By dusk of the third day, everyone in the village was starting to get restless. Dean summed it up after they'd eaten supper and gone back to their own huts.
Whole place is antsy, Dad. Getting so they almost want Bavar and his gang to come so they can get it all over with one way or the other.
Ryan sat on the bed, pulling off his muddied combat boots. The belt with the Sig Sauer and the Panga lay on the floor at his side. Christy had gone to the lake to wash and cool off after the hard work of the day, leaving the father and son together.
You think they're frightened, Dean?
No, not scared. They seem to think that having Jack with them means that nothing can go wrong, and all the rest of us as well. I keep overhearing them talking about the will of the gods and all that shit.
It's not shit to them, son. The thing that worries me is the way everyone keeps snatching quick worshipping looks at Jack when they think nobody's watching them. It bothers me that they still hang on to this belief that Jack's the chosen one that their religion talks about. The god with the pale skin and hair like white fire that'll come and rescue them and make them all right forever and ever. This business with the slavers could easy go wrong and twist in our hands like a broken knife. I get the feeling that it's Koala and his priests are going to want someone to point an accusing finger at. And that'll be Jack and us.
The fourth day opened dull and overcast, with a hint of drizzle in the air. There was no communal breaking of the night's fast, everyone eating in the shelter of their huts. Ryan asked the four other companions to join him, Christy, and Dean in their main room, sitting around eating the fresh-baked maize bread, ladling out helpings of the fiery red beans and chili.
Today?
It wasn't yesterday. Could be tomorrow. Might be today.
How about us sending scouts into the forest? Try and break their trail.
Nah. Slavers snare them and make them talk, and we're all dead meat.
Everything's just about as ready as it can be, isn't it?
Yeah. I hope they come soon. Trader used to say that being combat-honed only lasted a day or so. Then everyone starts to lose that sharpness.
The adrenaline edge. It's true. Like if a big sporting event gets postponed, even for an hour, the competitors start off flat and stale.
It's a Quattle remarked that he would like some repair work done on the clay wall of that fishing dam a mile or so north. Said that he could send the younger children and a couple of the older women to keep an eye on them. If there's any sign of trouble, they would melt away into the trees. What about the children and the dam? Itzcoatl was insistent it needed doing after all that torrential rain the other day.
I don't like it. JB, what do you think?
Don't much like it either. Problem is that if we go and guard them, we won't be much good against the whole mess of slavers. They're going to be vulnerable.
Still, it's their village and their dam and their children. I guess we tell him that we aren't happy, but leave it down to him.
I could go with him, Dad.
Ryan considered the idea and nearly allowed his son to go, but finally decided against it. Later that morning, Ryan was checking the walls and traps with Doc and Jack when Itzcoatl joined them. The chief looked concerned and finally addressed Jack.
The two women who took food to the children up at Earth Wall that holds water have not come back.
How long it been?
Time was a problem.
Been gone longer than should have been gone.
It's worth a check. You want to go take a look and report back here, Jack?
Sure. You want to come, Doc?
The old man looked at the sky. It had brightened since the early dawn, and the sun had broken through wisps of high cumulus cloud.
Why not?
Jack led the way north, careful not to set too fast a pace. Even so, Doc was struggling as the sun rose higher and the humidity increased.
Upon my sacred soul, laddie, I have the fear that you might turn around and see a heap of clothing containing a few old bones and a puddle of perspiration.
You want to go back to the village?
No. Never let it be said that a tanner gave up on anything.
Not far now.
You think there might be trouble, Jack?
Who knows, Doc? It's quiet.
Indeed it is, dear boy. In my time in Deathlands, I have come to learn that such a stillness can oft betoken danger. You think that the slavers might be close by?
Might be, Doc. Stay inside of the trail and keep triple red watch.
The sun was close to directly overhead, and the temperature had risen way above the 100 mark. Doc drew the big lama from its holster and cocked the hammer over the single 18-gauge round.